found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Coming to you in the sweet, sweet, sweet Draughton Customers makeshift studio here. So we are welcoming today Nate Warnke, owner of Rockhound Brewing Company. Nate, how are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for having me again, James.
I'm excited. I'm excited, and I'll tell you why. Because, one, you're the first person that I've ever had on this show for the second time.
Whoa.
So that's cool, right?
It's already a big deal for
me.
Yeah,
right?
I am honored. Thank you.
And then, second thing, you're the first person I've had on the show that's in the process of closing their business.
Sure.
So this is, I'm excited because the authentic part of Authentic Business Adventures, businesses close, man. Arguably, well, eventually all of them do, right? Nothing lasts forever.
eventually everyone closes.
It's just like the COVID thing with death, right? Somebody died, like, well, everybody does. Nobody gets out alive, right?
Yep.
At any rate, we're talking to you. You're closing in a month?
A little less than a month. Yeah, just a little less than a month, yeah.
Okay. Yep. So for the people that don't know who you are and what you do, let's just start with the beginning. So when did you start your business? Why did you start it? Let's just give the Cliff Notes version.
Yeah, I'll give the 2-minute version of that. So basically, a little over six years ago, I left a corporate job and I wanted to start a business. And I decided that business was going to be a brew pub because I really liked the vibe of brew pubs and it was a growing business segment.
All right.
So I came up with Rockhound Brewing Company, which I'm wearing all the logos today.
Nice.
You know, I got to wear them while I can.
Sure.
So I started Rockhound Brewing Company in 2016, and it was kind of my brainchild, my desire to make good beer and make a community around a brew pub.
Mm-hmm.
And then here we are, you know, 4.5 years later, and, you know, we're working on shutdown. But, yeah, we have a small brew pub. It's about 100 seats.
All right.
So there's 100 seats. We have 108 capacity.
Okay.
And I'll segue into the COVID thing. Like, right now our capacity is 27.
That's crazy to me.
That's a quarter. And, you know, it's 100 seats is a small restaurant. It is. And we have a full kitchen. So we have a full restaurant, full food menu, and a full brewing operation on site. Every one of our beers is brewed on site unless otherwise stated as a collaboration.
Sure.
So I wanted to make it its own little community, and it was owner operated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically me. And I've got a couple of very, very dedicated staff, and they've been there for, my house manager, she's been there since day one.
Wow.
Still got the same. She wasn't house manager day one, but she got promoted 2 years later because that was the future of the pub.
In my opinion.
My chef has been involved since before day one because he was a friend of mine, and he was kind of a fill-in for a while, and then eventually became my chef. So
all right.
this is family, right? So we are family, and we built up a community. We built up a family. We had a lot of good time for the 5 years that I've been in operation. I live 6 blocks away, so it's in my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are today. And now we're in COVID land, and I'm sure we'll talk about plenty of that later. But it's been a lot of fun for 5 years, but now it's time to let it go.
All right. So did you see, when you first started your business, what was the goal? What was the end game? Or did you have an end game?
Actually, I did. When I started the business, I saw the cash flow in beer, and I saw the cash flow in restaurants, and I said, well, you know, I'm a pretty smart guy. I've never had restaurant experience, but I had homebrew experience. Hired people who knew more than I did from a restaurant perspective, because you hire what you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hoping to bring in some good cash flow, pay down some loans, and then turn that cash flow into real estate property.
So my
goal was actually to get that thing self-sufficient, take the cash flow out of that, and put it into investment properties. Just small ones, you know, start out with. That was the actual goal when I started talking about it 6 years ago. And then eventually sell the brew pub, my assumption was in 10 years, to employees.
All right.
You know, and employees that were potentially interested in. And I did at some point have employees who were interested in buying the thing out. And I figured it would be a 10-year plan where I would sell it to them and they could
own it. You had employees that showed interest already.
Yeah, I showed interest, you know, 3-4 years in. I had employees who were interested in potentially looking at buying it. So they loved what I was building at the time.
Is there any reason not to sell it to them now?
The economics are totally upside down for that.
Bargain basement price.
I would entertain that, but I don't think any of my employees have the potential for loans or cash on hand to do it.
Sure.
And I don't think they're going to be able to get that loan under the current circumstances.
All right.
That's even at bargain basement prices.
Sure.
I would entertain that. But
so, like, I looked at your Facebook page. your website. Mm-hmm. You have a following that any restaurant would be proud of.
Absolutely.
Right? You got over 700 reviews, the majority of them positive. You're 4 point whatever, close to five.
Yeah,
right?
It's 4.4, 4.3 on Google, and 4.6 on Facebook.
That's super awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Super, like, because there's always
going to be. I'm very proud of that, actually. That's hard. That's
right.
Really, that's really hard.
So that's what I mean. There's value to that, right?
Mm-hmm. There is.
Because I guess it's not necessarily tangible real estate, but in the internet world, that's valuable real estate.
It is. And that, you know, that's something that I guess is a good lesson for any business that's open or closed or starting up, is that I paid a lot of attention to social media at the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And negative reviews, I took every one of them seriously.
All right.
And, you know, restaurant reviews can be completely...
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, right. I don't want to get into the Yelp discussion because I had that the other day with somebody. But it's like you can go anywhere with restaurant reviews.
I was just joking with someone who looked at the reviews for the Grand Canyon.
Yeah. Exactly. The National Park reviews. Those are
fantastic. Like someone's like, it was foggy that day.
It was foggy. I couldn't see it, right? You know, you go to Sequoia National Park. Oh, too many big trees.
It's like,
oh, that's the point. You know, and that's true for restaurants,
too. That's why 5.0s were like,
You know, you go to any restaurants, the higher end restaurants in Madison, the ones that are very, very well known.
Yeah.
And even they get, you know, 2-star and 1-star reviews.
Oh, sure.
Because one, everybody makes a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And we get that. Two, it's about fixing that mistake. Three, you can make no mistakes and someone still won't like you.
Oh, yeah.
And just be kind of a jerk.
Haters gonna hate.
Right. And you're just like, well, I didn't like it because I don't like burgers. I'm like, well, I'm a Rupa. What do you, you know?
Right.
We you know,
full what operate. Did you expect?
We had salads. We had sandwiches. We had burgers. We had pasta. Right. We have a full menu.
Right.
It's slimmed down a little bit now, but you know, there's something for everyone. There's something for vegetarians and vegans. And you know, vegans, like, I don't like the place because I don't like the vegan options. It's like 25% of my menu was vegan at one point, and they didn't like the vegan options. That's not a dig.
Doesn't taste like meat.
That's not a dig against vegan. I'll even look at the camera on that one. Not a dig against vegans. It was just like, there's always going to be people that, you know, your burger's too big, your burger's too small, your steak is whatever. You know?
I never understood the people that complained about getting too much food.
Correct, yeah.
Like, what kind of sheltered life did you live?
Well,
where that is your complaint.
Yeah.
You fed me too much food.
It more often it's the other way. Like, so, I left hungry.
Oh.
Your burger is, it's tiny. It's an eighth of a pound. Well, our burgers are certified Black Angus 1/3 pound.
Sure.
They're 5.3 ounces. So someone says smaller than a McDonald's burger in one of my reviews somewhere there. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Wow.
You know, even our kids' burger is bigger than a McDonald's burger. So
dang.
That's.
All right.
So I paid attention to the reviews.
That's sure.
Very important. Mm-hmm. And we built up that reputation of taking it seriously.
Okay.
You know, and making sure we address it. Even the people that were completely, and I will say this flat out, actually wrong in the review. I addressed it and tried to help massage the conversation and apologize to them. And
isn't that crazy when you have to tap dance with the people that
are idiots? Yeah, and you know, it was like the burger situation is a real situation where she said the burger was absolutely boring, there was nothing on it, and it was too small. And I said, well, you ordered a classic burger.
Right.
The classic burger says right on the menu, it's just a burger and a bun, and then you can add cheese and lettuce and tomato, all for you know, a couple of pennies or a dollar for cheese. You know, it's a build-your-own burger for a reason, so people can build it however they want to. She complained there was nothing on it. There was no cheese. It's like, well, cheese is $1 or $1.50 extra. You could have ordered cheese. So, you know, you had to massage that conversation. I'm sorry. Would you like to come back in and try it again? It was too small. I said, it's a third pound. We patty them ourselves. We know they're a third. So, but you have to take it all seriously because those people have power in the internet. The power is very strong on the customer side.
Right. Especially, and it's anonymous power to a point, right?
In some ways, yeah. That's why I like Facebook, especially because it's not very anonymous.
Okay.
You have to be yourself on Facebook, right? So you're James Kademan on
Facebook. I suppose to a point,
right?
Sure, yeah.
I'm Nate Warnke on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You can fake it, but not very easily on Facebook.
It takes time to.
It takes a lot of work. Right. So no one's going to do that. Anyways. But building up, like, the Facebook at one point was 4.6, and I think Google was 4.3 or 4.4.
Okay.
That's very high for...
But it's over 700 reviews.
Yeah. It's very high for restaurants overall. As far
that's insane. 5 years, and you got 700 reviews?
Yeah.
That's incredible to me. So to me, I'm like, there's value there.
There is value there.
So I think it would be worth, well, I don't know, at least asking.
Sure. I mean... Just because I'm closing, and we'll talk about whatever you want to there, just because I'm closing doesn't mean there isn't value to the restaurant.
Right.
And, you know, talking to my primary lender, my credit union that's the primary lender, they are SBA secured, and the SBA looks for deals to get their money off the books. Right?
Sure.
So they'll take a sweetheart deal for the SBA to get it. If someone wants to buy the whole thing
right.
as a turnkey restaurant, it's right there, ready to go.
All right.
Even if they want to take the name off the wall and change the name, it's still pretty turnkey. You spend mm-hmm. a couple of grand and you got a new name.
So I was going to ask you about that, right?
Yeah.
Because one, I want to talk about lending just to get a restaurant alone. Your restaurant, any restaurant.
Yeah.
When you look at the volume of restaurants that come up and then go away.
Right.
It's a ton.
Yeah.
I don't know what the percentage is or what the stats are, but it's got to be a lot.
First 5 years when I opened, this mm-hmm. was my market research when I opened. First 5 years, I think it's 60-some% within the first 5 years.
Make it or don't make it?
Don't make it.
60%.
Failure. Now that said.
So it's lending to a losing bet.
Correct. But I have a brew pub. And a okay. brew pub has an inherent competitive advantage. Again, we're talking 5 years ago.
Sure.
A brew pub has an inherent competitive advantage. Because beer is such a big thing, people mm-hmm. love the idea. They'll go just for the beer, just for the experience of going to that brew pub.
All right.
So it was only in around 40% failure.
All right. So now it's a winning-ish bet.
Better right? than 50%.
Yeah.
Right? So
you're that's betting on
than,
black or red.
Eh? Yeah, right. Yeah. You're better than it's better than betting on black and red.
Right.
But that said, in Madison area and Wisconsin overall, beer was on such the upswing that it was. There was no calculated percentage that I could find, but it was a lower. They just weren't closing overall.
Got it.
Brew pubs, they weren't closing in Wisconsin.
Okay.
So.
Well, that's good. We like our alcohol.
So, yeah, I was looking, and that's what I sold to the banks and private investors.
So, gotcha.
Yeah.
So do they, was it tough to get money to open up a brew pub?
It is.
Okay.
And my situation was quite the, I don't know if you want to call it a house of cards.
Okay.
Or in some ways, I'll call it very creative.
All right.
And some people, to clarify, some people use this as creative financing as a term of illegal. No, not that. I'm not laundering money.
Right.
It was very creative in the way that I talked to a lawyer about how to work on creative financing.
Okay.
So I can get a primary lender through the SBA, Small mm-hmm. Business Administration. They had loans. They
so still it's just loans. A bank.
It's just a bank.
Bank, credit union, whatever.
Yeah, it was a crazy. So okay. I applied at, I talked to almost 24 banks in the area.
Wow!
I had to make my sales pitch. Sometimes it was a 5-minute over the phone. They're like, yeah, we're definitely not interested because it's restaurant-based.
So you get a no right away
yeah, and that's
from
fine.
Some.
Boom, easy.
Okay, sure.
Cool. Some said, let's sit down in person.
All right.
So I had this kind of sales pitch all figured out. I'll describe the puzzle mm-hmm. instead of a house of cards. It's a puzzle. Mm-hmm. To make the puzzle whole, I needed a bank to give me a good chunk of the money, 60 to 80% of that money potentially coming from a bank.
Okay.
Or lender. So it turned out being a credit union. And on top of that, I need some operational financing. So I went through WIBIC for some mm-hmm. operational financing. And I also went through Madison Development Corporation for some operational
sure.
financing.
Okay.
And I was able to secure those loans with some private investors who helped co-sign them as well. And co-sign that, you know, I was an honest guy, basically.
So co-sign being like a dad would co-sign for a kid on a car or something
correct,
like that?
Correct, yeah. So these are either friends or family or relatives who were co-signing on that loan. To
so they weren't fronting the money. They're just essentially keeping your promise.
Correct. And if okay. I fail on my promise, then they have to step in.
Oh, does that mean that they have to step in now?
Yes, they do.
Oh.
So, well,
100% or?
Well, the loans are dramatically reduced.
Okay.
From what they started out, but some of them are out a good chunk of money.
Okay.
So, ouch. Well, right. I'm going to table that one.
Okay.
And just say the other thing I did was get a bunch of private investors to give me between $10,000 and $15,000.
So that wasn't cosign. That was
just
writing you a
that's
check.
Cash. They wrote me a okay. check, and I we agreed upon an interest rate, and it was basically just like any type of loan.
Okay.
Where you loan me $10,000 so, and I give you X percent interest and pay you back monthly.
All right. I feel like
some
I
of them are out too.
I feel like I have to whiteboard this a little bit.
Yeah, you do.
Because
yeah.
you got the credit union.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got Madison Development Corporation. Mm-hmm. Then you got WIBIC is in there as well?
Yep, WIBIC's in there as well.
Okay, so there's a third. Then you have the co-signers for the WIBIC one or for all three?
The co-signers were for WIBIC and MDC.
Okay.
So those two got co-signers.
Okay. And then on top of that, you have the individual investors.
Individual
for
private
the 10
investors.
To 15 yep. grand. How much money are you talking total to start this thing up?
I won't say the exact amount, but I'll say it was more than my house cost, but less than $1 million.
Okay.
That's my official.
So ballpark $500,000-ish?
Yeah, a little over $500,000.
I mean, there's a lot of stainless steel there.
Mm-hmm.
The hoods, the stoves, the staff, the glasses, the knives, the forks.
Yeah.
All that stuff. Yeah. I look at business plans for restaurants, and it's not cheap.
There's a lot in there. And a lot of that went into you know, stainless steel equipment for the brewing and then finishing out
the
space.
Oh, just the brewing equipment alone. Forget about the restaurant portion. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've looked at plans for those. I'm like, this is financial suicide. You better hope that you
got it. Well, I got a good deal on the brewing equipment. I was actually one of the last good deals before the market took one of these, you know. Before the next inflection point in brewing equipment cost. Okay. So I got a really good sweetheart deal.
All right.
They raised the price 40% after I signed.
40?
Because people were willing to pay, and I got one of the last good deals. They're like, Nate, you got really lucky, and I did.
Wow.
So that saved me a bundle right there.
All
right. Just in being able to sign. And they said, your offer was on the table, and it was good for X days. They said, but we just raised the prices. So
dang.
They didn't tell me that until after I signed, because they didn't want to use it as a sales tactic.
Okay.
There was a real nice, the company's in Nebraska. So
sure.
It's a fantastic company. Wow. So they did it really good work.
Okay, so you got a bunch of cash, and then did you have to front any money?
I did. I put in $60,000.
Okay.
And that had to cover that had to be 10% of the SBA loan. So the SBA loan was $600.
Sure.
So I had to put in $60,000.
Okay.
And then on top of that, we did have a couple of infusions of cash that I pulled in myself.
Okay.
For operational purposes. About 6 months in, I put a touch in. And then this past winter, I rearranged operations and restructured some loans and put in a bunch of my own cash again, of course, right before the pandemic hit.
Did you get any financial help through the PPP stuff or any of the whatever?
Yep, the CARES
Act.
We're
all in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny because we're all in. I was like, $2,500 when you got 20 staff.
Yeah, right. Well, anything's better than
nothing. It's something, right?
I got two grants and I've got the PPP loan.
Okay.
I have to file all the paperwork for forgiveness, but I got the max allowable by my business for PPP, which is good. That's what kept me alive.
All right. So. All right. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the decision to close.
Sure.
So you, well, actually, let's back up a step.
Sure.
March, April, when people are starting to be like, wait, what is this?
Yeah.
And it's kind of coming around that this is the actual thing, and we're going to have to deal with this for more than just a couple weeks. Tell me what the reaction was with staff, with your people, with your customers, just maybe even vendors. I don't know if you had some of them that just closed up shop.
There's some vendor issues. That was interesting. That didn't happen until a month or two. Restaurants typically don't do very well in winter.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, you know, we lost a little money in January as expected. February,
that's typical.
Yeah. So February, we made a profit.
Okay.
I made a bookable profit in February because we changed a whole bunch of operations around last fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I got rid of things that didn't work, right? So this is just kind of setting the stage for disappointment in my...
Sure. You're creating the systems, or you improved, right, over the course of
years? My chef and my house manager and I, we sat down, we said, well, brunch isn't working. We have to get rid of brunch. We love brunch. We hate the fact that we have to get rid of brunch, but brunch wasn't working, so brunch was off the table.
All right.
7 days a week wasn't working. It was too hard to staff, so Mondays were off the table. Boom. So we got rid of brunch, got rid of Mondays. It let us all sit down and breathe for a minute, and it turned around our operations to make it more, and we adjusted the menu, to make it more readily sustainable and easier to produce with just fewer items and keep it higher quality at the same time.
Okay.
Keep the customers happy, keep some of our favorites on there.
Fewer menu options.
Fewer menu options, but keep them higher quality, and then we were able to be more consistent that way too. And that's I can go back to the reviews, consistency.
Right. Saying a burger was good this day, but not so good the other day.
Right. So the burger should always be cooked the same. The pasta should always be cooked the same.
Gotcha.
So we did that, and then we adjusted the hours a little bit to make it a little easier on our staff, because sometimes it's just hard. We were open over 100 hours a week.
All right.
So we said that's not going to work. So now, then at that point, we're open like 75 to 80.
So at what point did you become what you would consider to be profitable?
Well, we've had months here and there that have been profitable for all 5 years, I guess you could say, 4.5 years. But February, we looked at it and said, we did it.
All right.
We made it. The operations
February of this year.
This year.
Oh.
February 2020. We're like, God,
and then that left
hook
comes.
I went on vacation and I came back, and then I was in Malaysia and COVID was just touching Malaysia right when my wife and I were in Malaysia on vacation.
Okay.
Started reading about it and like, it's going to be the same thing as like
Spanish flu,
SARS,
right?
And MERS, and or maybe it'll be like
killer bees.
Was H1N1, the swine flu, right? Yep. I got that one. I got swine flu. That was not fun. But, you know, so blah, 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 blah. Maybe it'll just be like that. It's no big deal. I'm like, I'm not going to worry about it until we have to.
Sure.
And then so came home, and then it started getting in the United States, and March came around, And we saw a notable drop in business in early March before any of the lockdown discussions, the stay at
home. You did?
Yeah, we saw, we started scratching our heads because, you know, usually March, April, May are my three biggest months historically.
Really?
Yeah, because basketball and sports and all that kind of stuff.
All right.
And people come out for that because I'm a bit near the university. Plus people are, you know, waking up. You know, like they're sure. from the winter hibernation. Like, I need to go out.
Mm-hmm. I need to see people.
I need to see people. You know, comfort food. We pot pies and burgers. It's comfort food. People go out for that in March. And then April and May are just filled with beer events galore.
Mm-hmm.
And those beer events bring us a lot of business. So beginning of March, I said, man, we're 20% below last year.
20%?
Yeah.
All right.
That's before... before the official COVID, you know, lockdown thing.
Wow. All right.
I said, this is not good news.
No.
I said, some of that can be attributed to losing Monday and losing brunch. I said, but that was like 10% of our business. So then the lockdown happened, and we had to do a lot of quick thinking on our feet real fast.
Did you guys ever close for?
We never closed fully.
Okay.
So, you know, everybody says March 13th, Friday the 13th was the last regular day in the world for Wisconsinites. And then we had the safer at home order and the order that restaurants had to close. And that was the 16th, I guess that would be the Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And we had I had a manager meeting on that Monday because we were trying to figure out how to operate during the pandemic. And then that order comes through and we're like, well, that just made us change our our tune.
Sorry about your profit.
Well, the first thing that happened is I had 23 employees.
Oh, okay.
And by the end of that day, I had two.
Two?
We laid off 21 employees in one day.
Because
we looked at it and said, well, we can only be open for carryout, and that only requires one person at the bar and one person in the kitchen to just make some stuff available for carryout.
Dang!
So all I had was my salaried managers running the place and me.
Whoa!
And I was the guy running the food and packaging it up and taking it out to people.
Did you have another brewer guy, or were you the brewer guy?
So I was. We just shut down brewing operations because we didn't. You know, we had enough beer on hand to just kind of carry through for a couple months.
Okay.
Right, ride it through. And then we knew it was going to be, you know, weeks, couple months. Everyone's like, it'll be 2 months or something like that. We'll get this thing under control. We'll figure it out. So I'm like, well, 2 months. So we quickly hired back part-time just a couple of people, right? So we're like, all right, we need a little help in the kitchen. You know,
so same previous employees?
Previous employees. Okay. We're like, well, we need to, you know, so first thing we did, we said, we'll give you jobs when we can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, current employees, you get first dibs at any jobs, obviously, because we love you guys. You know, you're our family here. But, you know, my manager... she sent the email and she just felt sick to her stomach because she had to lay off 21 employees.
Via email. Okay.
Like that, just saying, we're sorry, this is what we have to do. We can make 21 phone calls in that amount of time. We it was just...
Yeah, I don't know. He broke up over email.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we broke up with 21 employees over email.
Dang.
Some of them were part-time, but some of them were full-time. This was their gig. They're full-time bartenders, you know? They're students that were paying their way through grad school or... you know, whatnot.
So who's the guy that I would always see when I'd go in? Older gentleman, beard, behind
Chuck.
The bar?
Yeah, that's Chuck.
So he was on that list?
He was on that list too. As things progress, he's there right now, literally, as we're recording this.
All right.
He's our cleaning guy right now.
Mm.
So we were able to hire him back when we were able to open for full service operations. We were able to hire him back as the cleaning guy.
Full service at 25%.
Yeah, exactly. But so yeah,
what's your profit?
So we had to lay off everybody. We had to revamp the menu so that we could actually cook it quickly.
Okay.
And my chef he can spin in the kitchen and do amazing things with just one guy.
Because carryout, people expect to order it, pick it up.
Right. Well, they give us a time, you know. So I was in charge. Jamie, my manager, and she and I were in charge of the phones. We'd answer the phones, and I'd put together the orders. You know, she'd punch them back. They'd come up. You know, carry out, and that worked. quite efficiently for a while. It wasn't sustainable long term, but it was efficient.
Right.
It could pay their salaries. It could pay for the food product.
So I want to pause a little bit there.
Yeah.
Because you have rent on this place that you're having to hustle.
Yeah.
And you're at, I don't know, 10% capacity or something, maybe?
Whatever you want to call it, yeah.
Yeah, less than normal.
Yeah, we're doing maybe 20% of the business.
So you have, in business, you have your static costs, right? Your rent, your insurance, all that jazz. Mm-hmm. And then you have your dynamic costs that go with the food and all that jazz.
Yep.
So those static costs, that's still a lot of money.
It's a ton of money.
So, and especially rent on a place like that, decent size, you get your loans and all that jazz.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of those people come to you and say, hey, let's knock this down until this passes? Or did you go to them and ask them?
Yeah, that was some of the initial conversations we had, was how to look at the loans and look at the rent and say what works and what doesn't.
Yeah. Were people cool?
Yeah,
were banks
overall,
cool? Was the landlord cool? Or were they just like, go pound sand?
Nobody said go pound sand, luckily. My private investors, immediately all of them said, nah, just don't worry about the payments for now. Just,
okay.
You know, we'll worry about it after this is all over kind of thing. So I had some private investors. There was, I think, five of them.
Okay.
They all said, just don't worry about it. We'll come up with a deal later. Because they're all friends and family.
Sure.
Which is unfortunate.
That's going to make Thanksgiving awkward.
Yeah, well, you're not supposed to do Thanksgiving this year. Didn't you know that? You're not.
I did not. That's the best holiday in the world.
You're not supposed to do Thanksgiving this year. It'll just all spread COVID. Anyways. So yeah, private investors were fine. Landlord did a very instantaneous deferral.
Okay.
Right? So he deferred the rent for 3 months right off the bat.
So saying 50%, you still owe it.
50% deferral.
But we're just going to kick the can down the road.
We're going to kick the can down the road.
Okay.
Right now, he said, this is what we're going to do. And I said, okay.
Right.
So I paid 50% for 3 months.
Okay. So good, but not great.
Yeah, not great. But when you realize that 50% was more than 25% of what I was bringing in, you can't pay 25% of your revenue on rent.
No. That's so interesting.
It just doesn't work.
When March hit, and I remember the shutdown order thing coming, I was like, there's no way that they can hit the brakes on the economy like this. There's no way.
Correct. Yeah, it's hard.
Because the fallout, like people losing their jobs, and look at landlord, right? Landlord's got to pay for the building, pay for insurance, all this kind of stuff. If you can't pay rent, that person can't pay their stuff.
Well, they got mortgages on their buildings.
Right.
Right.
This is a huge domino game that we're just like, kick. Let's just see what happens.
And you hope there's a gap in those dominoes.
Yeah, and I'm like, there's no way that they would do this. Mm-hmm. And this is me being totally wrong.
Well,
they totally did it.
Well, it's also worldwide, so it's not like we're the only ones who did it.
Yeah, it doesn't make it right.
Well, right. But it was worldwide, and we don't have to get into any of the politics, positive or negative, of decisions made in different countries. But it was a worldwide thing where every country in the industrialized world, especially, and even some of the non-industrialized, they all decided, we got to shut down for a little while and then figure out what the heck to do later.
Right.
So
we're still in that phase.
I know. That's the thing.
What do we do now?
I don't know what to do.
Seriously? After 6 months, we still don't know what to do.
But, you know, it's a whole worldwide thing. And I think what was most important to note is that what we all did as business owners, whether it was me in a restaurant, a landlord, I'm trying to think of another a good business example, someone else who might have been terribly, you know, you can even like Target or the grocery stores.
I'm thinking of your vendors, right?
Yeah, the vendors.
You got the truck that delivers your food, all of a sudden they're.
Right. So we all had to look and say, what works best for us? So we go back into our own little box and say, what do I. So instead of saying we, we say, what do I need to do to survive this thing? And what do I need to happen? And that's where the unfortunate decision comes in, where we say, I have 23 employees, I only need 2. That sucks. For the 21 that just got that email.
Yeah.
So what do I need to do? Well, to survive this right now, I need to pay my loans. I need to pay my rent. I need to pay these bills. And I need to see if I can stay open. And I hate to do this, but we have to let go of 21 employees. Vendors did the same thing. They one of our main food vendors cut down their drivers by just like that. Like they're immediately... They don't need to drive trucks all over the state anymore, or as many trucks, I should say, all over the state. So they cut their driver roles in half. So all these truck drivers who had a very simple, easy gig, you get in your truck at whatever 2 a.m. or just really early in the morning, drive to a bunch of restaurants, drop off a bunch of food product, and go home, and you can sleep it off, right?
Right.
So they had a nice gig from that perspective, and they just got laid off too.
Yeah, I was a delivery driver for a while.
Not exactly a glamorous thing, but it's...
No, not at all. But it was...
Consistent.
I was delivering beer for, I think, 6 months.
Sure. But it's consistent.
And you were a god to a lot of people, right?
You're the beer man.
But I don't know how their gigs went, but I also delivered milk with my dad for a while.
Yeah.
And I, like, schools. You're delivering half pints of milk to schools.
Well, then schools shut down, right? Everybody's at home, right? So we won't talk about the parents.
Restaurants.
I'm not a parent, so I can't talk about that. But the other thing we had to talk about...
It's a mess.
Right. From a business perspective, the other thing we talked about was like, all right, how do we make this a to-go menu and how do we make this work? And for a while, it was, you know, people calling in and we put our menu on the website. It was always been on there.
Mm-hmm.
And we made sure we updated if there were specials. We just have to update the website literally every day.
So I want to ask you about that as well.
Every day.
Because could people order on the website or did you come up with that or are you just like,
well, that's a phone call? That was a great serendipitous thing. We had gotten, so I have a point of sale system that's, mm-hmm. that's through a company called Heartland.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of an older system. It's like
the phone line and all that.
Yeah,
kind of
yeah.
Stuff?
Well, not quite, but it's based off of Microsoft. Okay. So it's a little older. It's not as, it's a little clumsy. And we'd gotten a couple months earlier, we'd gotten a spiel from their new system, which is iPad based and allowed for online ordering.
Uh-huh.
And then in the pandemic, and I said, well, I'm not going to change over my point of sale. Right? It'll cost me $5,000 to change it over.
Boo!
It was supposed to be a long-term investment. We're like,
sure,
this is beautiful. And you could have the handhelds and all that kind of stuff. And they said, we're giving you a free trial. All you got to do is buy the iPads.
All right.
And I saw
a few $100.
Yeah, I got two iPads off of credit card points. They were, I had credit card points. So I'm like, I'm getting two iPads with my credit card points.
They're on the verge of disposable, right?
Right. So yeah. I got two iPads for the kitchen and my credit card points. And then they went forward and set up our online ordering system for free.
Oh, wow.
The company did, which was fantastic. Uh-huh. So now suddenly we've got a link off of our website that says you want to order online and pay online.
Mm.
Same credit card processor, all integrated beautifully, where people could pay. And then we just get a little slip that just printed off a little printer, and it would say, pick up at 5:30. We'd cook it, have it ready for 5:30.
All right.
So that was a saving grace.
Wow.
Yeah, that was huge. And there were a lot of restaurants that weren't as, quote, lucky to who'd have that point of sale where they could get that online ordering system set up for free.
Now, look at most restaurants where you're banking on people coming to you.
Correct,
you're
yeah.
not expecting
we're
people
in-house.
To...
We're don't do, we didn't do, we did a couple to-go orders a week.
Mm-hmm.
Before this, and now it's all to go.
Yeah.
Every single last order is a bag that you have to hand someone to go.
Mm-hmm. I could see it's just an interesting dynamic because you look at pizza places, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pizza places where people are ordering delivery or takeout or whatever, they were made for this.
It's correct. They're automatically online
ordering. So, yeah. You know, ain't no thing with them, right? But other places where you're expecting the atmosphere to be the reason that people come to you.
Is a place.
There's no atmosphere anymore because you got
to
stay home.
I was creating community. I wasn't creating to-go pizza.
Yeah,
right? I'm creating a community.
Oh,
so we had a few orders a week, and now we went to every order is carryout, and we had a few delivery orders through Eat Street.
Okay,
we partnered with Eat Street well over a year ago.
Sure,
to just do a little bit of delivery here.
Right,
it was never more than a few a week.
We'll take a healthy nut.
So yeah, if they do delivery, it depends upon what your contract is, but some places they take the 20, 30, 40%. Off the top.
That's a big nut.
Yeah. And when your profit margin,
right?
Your gross margin on food is typically 30%, you know. So
all right.
Labor costs plus ingredient costs over 60% for food.
All right.
So then you look at what do you got left? You got 30, 35%. You're like, well, Eat Street just took 30% of that.
Right.
So the only reason it was there was just to move product.
Right.
You know, to allow people to have that experience if they couldn't make it. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
Eat Street orders never really picked up, and it's people don't want delivery rock on. They just didn't. I get that.
Right.
They'll pick it up. They don't want it delivered because it takes too long. It's not like a pizza which holds in a box pretty well.
Right.
Burgers just don't work as
it's
well.
It's all soggy and
just don't work as well. Pasta's okay.
So I want to ask you about the transition.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was just mass confusion.
Yeah.
With everyone, right?
Oh yeah.
Because my wife and I, or I guess my wife Kid and I, we used to go for breakfast every Sunday morning. Now, all of a sudden, we don't know what's open.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the rules are for when you go to this place. We don't know. Like, every restaurant kind of had its own thing. And I totally get it from a business owner standpoint. Just like, they were throwing a crazy curveball.
Yeah.
And they're all reacting in semi-different ways. And you don't know what the rules of the game are for ordering food, picking up food, all this jazz.
Yeah. Well, just to make sure we clarify, people still don't know what's going on half the time when they go into
fair,
a restaurant.
Totally fair.
People still come in like, I don't know how this works. We're like, well, we'll guide you through the process.
Right.
You're absolutely right. So, you know, first of all, there was no in-house at all for a couple months, right?
Okay.
So March 16th through, I think it was June something, or I don't know, it was after Memorial Day. So the quote-unquote lockdown ended after Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the judicial things where it was and it wasn't. And then Dane County put their own order down on top of it.
Yeah, that's added to the confusion, right?
It adds to the confusion. There was no consistent message. And that's one of my biggest political discussion arguments. Like, the problem is that they couldn't get together and make a consistent message.
There still isn't.
Right. That's at least in other countries, whether it's positive, negative, whether you agree, disagree,
right.
There's a consistent message from their president or prime minister.
Right.
And whether you talk a state level or a national level, there's no consistent message.
No, not at all.
Now, let's just forget about the rest of that conversation, because right. That's not what we're talking about.
Right.
That does hurt business, though.
Oh, incredibly so.
It hurts the public. It hurts. People don't know what to do, whether they should go out or not go out.
Right.
So I would say you could come back to that in just a small way in just a couple minutes. But I mean, it's when we were finally able to open back up again,
mm-hmm.
and we were able to open back up, and we were able to look at the way things worked, we did it our way.
Okay.
We took the Dane County order, followed all the rules that we had to there, and then added a few of our own processes and procedures to make sure, like cleanliness.
So just as a what were the Dane County rules?
They were pretty simple. It was for a while, it was questionable whether masks were or were not required.
Okay.
We required masks.
Okay.
There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. We gave them away for free.
So let me pause you right there. So if I order food from you or any place, right?
Yeah.
I would never know, can I go inside?
Right.
What are the rules for me to go inside? How do you know who I am versus any other person that walks in there?
Correct,
you know, yeah. Like, hey, I'm here for my food, right?
Yeah. Well, that was a lot easier than we thought it would be.
Okay.
Someone didn't have a mask and was just picking up food. They can wait outside, and if they need to run their credit card, we just grab their credit card and
sure.
run it real quick.
Okay.
It's spring, summer, so it wasn't too bad.
Okay.
Or wait in the vestibule real quick.
Right. Know,
so they just wait there. So we accommodated any of that.
All right.
When we got to dine in, and people didn't have a mask when they were able to dine in June, and moving forward, if they didn't have a mask for a while, we just gave them one for free. They cost us a few pennies a piece.
Mm-hmm.
We just asked anytime they got up from their table, they put their mask on. If they wanted to go look at the merchandise or go to the restroom, it was put your mask on, please.
Okay.
And we didn't.
So at the table, no mask because you're eating
and drinking. And we had some people that would leave it on the whole time unless they were actively eating or drinking.
Really?
Yeah, and that's, you know, when they're chatting with friends, because there are people that were there not with their necessarily their household.
Okay.
And they're just trying to, you know,
sure.
follow the rules as best possible.
All right.
And then the mask rule came down, and in Dane County, it's an absolute mask rule. You have the signs on doors and everything. And then when that came down, we decided to start charging $1 for masks. It was a legal requirement that we legally require masks.
Okay.
And technically, there's fines up to $1,000 for violation. For things, but they only are enforcing capacity violations, not really enforcing the mask thing. But
mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had to change to takeout, and then we had to change to how we're going to do in-house. We had to revamp the way the whole restaurant operated. We got plexiglass for around our bar, you know, plexiglass for our host stand in case someone came in and there's people that just don't want to have a conversation with you.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a little bit of an extra protection. So our host stand has a plexiglass. Looks like you're at a bank or something
right.
like that. We moved the host stand right up against the door. Right. So, yeah, we moved the host stand right up against the door to make sure people wouldn't come in without our authorization.
Mm-hmm.
We had to, you know, monitor the number of people in there, whether or not they were wearing masks and all that kind of stuff. So it was basically we took a very strong stance that we're going to do all the safety procedures possible. And then on top of that, much of my staff and I go get COVID tested every 2 weeks on kind of a rotating basis.
Wow.
I've had 12.
12 COVID 12 tests.
Negative COVID tests.
Okay.
Poke up the nose.
All right.
So, and that's just a little bit of a checkbox to say that, you know,
we're all good.
I got tested this week. My chef gets tested next week. Whatever, you know, and we're all kind of in a pod where we're so exposed to each other that if we keep a rotating negative set of tests, we feel pretty safe with each other.
Sure. Makes sense.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of the buzzword right now is called pivoting, and I hate using it, but you know, you had to change.
Oh yeah, new normal pivot. Yeah.
You had to change what you're doing every 5 minutes sometimes.
Totally.
But you know, every couple of weeks we had to think about changing things. And every time a new order came down from either the state or the locals, I was so proud that I could go on my Facebook page and say we didn't have to change anything because we were already doing this.
Fair.
You know,
okay.
We were already taking these precautions. You know, we're sanitizing things every couple hours. We're doing this. We're doing that. We're wearing masks.
Mm-hmm.
Every time a new order came up, we didn't have to change anything because I took that call to high road, I guess you want. The high road of saying, I'm going to do things as carefully as possible.
Sure. Err on the side of caution,
correct.
I suppose. Sure.
To try to make it more comfortable for my guests.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I suppose you never know from a customer standpoint where they stand. If they're just like, eh, ain't no thing. Or if they're like, I don't want to breathe anybody else's air within 12 feet of me.
Correct.
So you have to appease them, whatever.
Yeah, well, that's why we had a patio, too. So that helped, too, right? So in summer, we had a patio. So people.
Oh, that's right. The patio that, just got.
It just
was
got
that fall of last year?
Year? It was a year ago, yeah. So the patio was there, and we got that's got lucky that it got approved.
Mm-hmm. How many people can fit on the patio?
Well, with COVID, we can only fit 12.
Okay. Is that two tables or is it three tables?
That's four tables. There's two on the corners that are two tops. They're shoved way in the corner.
Okay.
And then two four tops that are kind of in the middle.
All right.
You know, so it's, there's space. But we would otherwise wouldn't be able to fit 20, 25.
All right.
You know, you put them together like you want to maximize that space.
Yeah.
Can't now.
Mm-hmm.
So we can only fit 12.
All right.
That's fine. But we have people that I don't ever want to go inside. I'm like, that's fine. If you do want to go inside, you have to wear a mask to go to the restroom or whatever. Like, can we just use the patio? Yep, that's fine. You know, host would see them out there. Sure. Staff takes care of them. They never have to come inside. That worked great all summer mm-hmm. long. August was, quote unquote, really good.
Okay. Just really good for an August or really good for a COVID August?
Really good for COVID August.
Okay.
Yeah, that was half of last year.
We nailed it.
Actually, no, it was 40% of last year.
That's probably not bad.
No, that's actually really good for COVID. 40% is really good.
At that point, did you have to be at 25% capacity?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's...
25% inside and then plus the patio.
Sure. All right.
So 27 plus 12. You mm-hmm. know, so that wasn't too bad.
Right. All right.
But yeah, it's that that consistent message, though, of the government was the big kicker that was really kind of...
There's just confusion, right?
Well, but yeah, and that's what also made me proud that I like took my own
sure.
route.
Yeah, my rule is that confused customers don't buy.
Correct.
And I remember I went to pick up Chinese once, and I almost got in a fight with this dude. Because, like, not... He got mad at me for something because... we don't have to go crazy down the story, but I ordered the food, and then I pull up in the parking lot, and I can see people are around, some people are in their cars, and I'm like, okay, there's a system here, but it's not clear what it is.
Right, right.
So I just called. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hey, order my food... I don't know what the game is, because it's a very small pickup place.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we shouldn't go in there. So I assume they were just bringing it out. And they're like, no, your stuff is ready. Come on in.
Okay.
So I'm like, all right. So I walk in, and apparently some guy wasn't happy that I was picking up my Chinese food. And he's like, we're waiting out here. Blah, 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 blah.
Wow.
Yeah. And okay. I'm like, all right. You're getting awfully upset about Chinese food. And whatever. It was just one of those things like... I don't need to do this again.
Right.
I just want to get Chinese food, right? Like, that's not... I'm not trying to get some cancer-curing drug for my mom or something mm-hmm. like that. I'm getting food. I can get food anywhere. I don't need to get food at a place that has no system. To the Chinese food... what I want to say... Like, they had no way to know that this was going to happen.
Correct, yeah.
They had... It's just mass chaos, right? Come up with all this plexiglass, invent all these ways, and then try to communicate this new system mm-hmm. to your customers, mm-hmm. it's never going to happen.
Right.
So, it's rough.
It is. We did pretty well in making sure our customers knew what was expected. We only had a couple of, you know, points of confusion or points of contention with our,
sure.
our customer base or people that just wanted to come in. And,
yeah.
You know, It frankly was most often from out of towners.
Sure. Okay.
People in Madison and Dane County understood what the rules were. Even if they didn't like it,
mm-hmm.
they understood it. They
right.
dealt with it.
Right.
Okay. Fine. I don't care if you like it or don't like it. It's the rule, and I don't want to get fined.
Right.
So,
come yeah, in, here's the game. You know, here's the game. Here are the rules.
Here's right. the rules. You know, here's what we expect. You know, you got to mm-hmm. sit 6 feet apart. People would try to come in with groups of eight, and the maximum allowed at a table is six. So we'd have to split them into two tables of four, and if they didn't like that, they would leave. And that was, we've seen a couple. We had a group of 12.
Oh.
And we said, we can't sit y'all together. I'm like, well, we're going to find a place that will. I'm like, that's fine. Go find someone who will break the rules, because I won't.
Right.
And I said that to them directly that way, and they left.
All right.
We've had other groups that come in that actually have... Like, it was a husband, wife, and five kids, their own five kids,
mm-hmm.
and I can't seat seven at a table.
All right.
So, the kids all sat at one table, and the husband and wife sat at another table, and they were fine with that.
I bet they were fine with that.
Right.
it's so quiet!
So, there was that kind of thing. But, you know, we stuck to our guns, and we followed the rules.
All right.
And we lost probably a few customers because of that. Groups of 12.
Right.
We had a group of 15 call and say, can we reserve the space? And we don't do any reservations at all right now. And
well, how many times could a group of 15 go to a restaurant just universally?
Correct. Agreed. Unless it's a really big place and it's the middle of an afternoon.
It's like I'm just sitting at the Batman table or something
yeah,
like this.
Yeah, yeah. And we've had reservations in you know, pre-COVID times of groups of 15, 20.
Okay.
And we'll accommodate them during slow times. We love that because mm-hmm. it would, you know, it's middle of a Sunday afternoon. Nothing's
sure.
happening. Boom, 20 group of 20, mm-hmm. made a reservation. We're ready for them. Walk in 15 people when we could only have 27 to begin with, and there's already 15 people in the restaurant.
27 in the whole restaurant.
In the whole restaurant. He's like, well, what are we going to do with you? We can't we can't accommodate you. We can't actually get you in here. We've had that happen.
All right.
And my manager had to turn them away, and they're like, well, I don't get it. Like, what about, you know, it was almost, we want to say to them, do you not know how to do math?
Right.
You know, it's like simple math. So, but, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to bash customers because, again, they're the bread and butter of the whole industry. But it's like, you have to understand that we have rules to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't want to follow them, we can't help you.
Right. Right. No, it's tough. It was tough. I see from a restaurant owner's mm-hmm. standpoint. And then from a customer standpoint, like I had a manager when I worked at the theater who told me never get in the restaurant business because people are hungry and cranky. And they're just, he's like, they're always in a pissy mood mm-hmm. until they get fed.
Yeah, it's going to feed them right away.
Yeah, and the whole COVID thing, people are locked up. So mm-hmm. there's just this tension in the air everywhere.
Yeah.
Especially, I think it was April to now. I don't know. There's just this, like, I'm cooped up, and there's confusion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just, like, you see, suicides are up. Depression is crazy up. Drinking yes. is up, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, so people are drinking more.
There's a tension in the air, right?
Yeah.
And so you add that on to, like, I just want food, and I don't know how to get food.
And they want social time.
Right.
Right now, everybody, you and I talked about this before the show started. Social time. People yeah. we're social creatures, most
totally
of us.
Totally social creatures, yeah.
And it drove me nuts for a couple months, too. Like, my life was going to the pub, going home, going mm-hmm. to the pub, going home. You know, luckily, I have a wife, and we could sit and chat, and we could watch movies. We love each other, but
right.
going to the pub, going home. And I was able to socialize with my couple of staff members that I did have.
But all right.
Some people, they just want to come out and they want to socialize. And, you know, my one of the people that we had to turn away, she came into the pub and she said, oh, my sister drove down here from Appleton. There's no way we're sitting at separate tables. So we're going somewhere else. We're like, okay.
All right.
She wanted to be social. I understand the perspective. She didn't mm-hmm. need to get snippy with us.
Right.
But I understand the perspective. But also she had to understand my perspective. I can't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So the customer behavior is challenging. Did you ever have any employees? I guess when you had to cut them all, maybe not so much, but there weren't any employees that said, I don't want to work here anymore because I don't want to deal with people.
Not really. We had some employees that were skittish of coming
skittish,
back.
Okay.
Of coming back because they were worried about exposure and coming back and that kind of thing. So when we put our employee procedures in place for mm-hmm. reopening,
mm-hmm.
We had an employee meeting and, you know, so we had our employee meeting with, I don't know, like 8 or 10 employees.
Yeah.
And we went over the procedures with them and told them how things were going to work.
Okay.
And it actually set a lot of them at ease.
All right.
Because they weren't sure how exposed or, you know, whatnot they were going to be or how much they had to do. And we still have a teamwork environment, but instead of having a teamwork where we cross jobs a lot,
mm-hmm.
we tried to keep people isolated within their specific job.
All right.
So we wouldn't have to go near each other as much.
Mm. Okay.
In a restaurant, you don't have a choice. We won't go near each other as much.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put in the plexiglass to help protect the employees as well, the mm-hmm. mask policy to help protect the employees as well, and then made sure we were careful about distancing of tables for rules and to help protect the employees as well.
Okay.
And we put procedures in place that minimized their contact at tables mm-hmm. and told the customers about that and said, we're not going to be at your tables often. If you need anything, don't hesitate to ask.
All right.
You know, we're not going to be at your table every 5 minutes going, how are things? Do you need more ketchup? But if you need something, just, you know, let us know.
Sure.
So we had to change customer expectations a little bit too. But our employees were very, very good in accommodating that. They like, I feel better about that.
Mm-hmm.
So we did have the employees that were able to come back, did come back. Some went home to their families. Some graduated college and left the city. And
mm-hmm.
so we lost a number of good people.
All right.
Because of COVID for various reasons.
But sure.
The ones that were still around could come back and feel safe about it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So when did the thought come in your head, like, we might have to close? Was that March when stuff get all weird and you had to lay everybody off? Or
well,
off?
You know, the thought crosses your mind in March, April, but you're like, no.
Or is that year three?
Right? Yeah, right, yeah, yeah. Year two. you know, you think, hey, we're thinking about closing, blah, blah, blah. No, it's a matter of looking at things day by day or week by week.
Mm-hmm.
And in March and April, I looked at it and said, we got a little money in the bank, and then April, I got approved for the PPP loan. I think it was April.
Okay.
I got approved for the PPP loan. I said, okay, cool. I got this chunk of money. It's designed for salaries, some rent, some utilities.
Which is interesting. So for the people that don't know about the PPP thing, right, the calculation had to do with employee payroll the year before, right?
Correct, the year before, yeah.
And the multiplier was 2.5.
Right.
So I saw that, and I was like, 2.5 months, we'll be done.
Right, yeah, that's right. Everybody's like, this is no big deal.
They're calling the shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it made it sound like the 0.5 was just like a little, it was just in case.
That was the extra to make sure you could pay not only your payroll, but your rent and utilities as well, right?
So I'm like, okay, if we can make it 2 months, we're all good. This is clearly people that know what's going on above me.
Yeah.
Call the shot.
That's what you think. They don't know what's going on above you.
Well, apparently not, because that 2 months came and went a few months ago.
Right. And they changed the rules of PPP, so you know you're supposed to use it within, I think, a 3 month time span, and then,
right.
And then eventually they extended it out to 6 months and whatnot. So
that's a mess too.
They did. They changed the rules, and now it's technically could be forgivable. I need to still apply for my forgiveness, but closing discussion kind of started happening. You know, every month I look at the amount of the money in the bank account, and go, we're fine, and then the next month we're fine, and I'm a big analyst guy. I worked in the corporate world for 12 years as an analyst mm-hmm. and numbers cruncher for vice presidents of a Fortune 500 company. So I'm like, I know how to do this. And I started crunching my own numbers and said, all right, PPP loan is gone.
All right.
My rent is past due. I'm paying him 50% and he wants the whole thing.
Oh, he didn't keep that rolling.
Right. So I'm paying him what I can.
All right.
And in good faith, I was paying him what I can. And I understood his business perspective and my business perspective.
Sure.
So I paid him what I could.
Yeah, it's not a charity.
Right. And, you know, the utilities and certain things of the place will never fully go away, you know, gas and electric.
Mm-hmm.
Insurance is down because I don't need as much.
Okay. Was that an active lowering, or did you have to ask for that?
No, they actively lowered it. They asked me what changes I'd made, and they changed my insurance and sent me a refund.
All right,
so
cool.
So I got a couple of grants from state government and county government. All that stuff was just looking at it, it's all gone. And then the CARES Act was paying my SBA loans for 6 months.
Oh, nice.
So they were paying the loan payment for 6 months.
Okay.
So I had no...
Is that something that you have to pay or would have to pay back later? No. Or they're just covering
that
nut?
They're covering it. So they were covering the WIBIC loan and the loan through the credit union.
All right.
Through Summit Credit Union. So they're covering two of my biggest loans.
All right.
So that was, you know, ended. Yes. That ends this month.
All right.
So here I were in October. I have to pay those loans again.
All right.
I don't have any PPP money left.
All right.
I've got about 25% revenue coming in. I got more beer than I know what to do with, and I don't need to produce any more beer for months. You know, the rent is well overdue.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last I'm thinking about looking at going, the market's changing, the customer base is changing, and my lease is up in March of this coming year. So mm-hmm. March 31st, about 5-6 months from now.
Okay.
My lease is up. Either I just kind of stumble along until I run out of cash.
Right.
And I've seen that happen with restaurants. They
close up one day.
Yeah, they like text their employees like, hey, we're done, bye.
Game over,
And that's a jerk move.
Incredibly,
And that I have gained employees from those jerk moves, by the way, mm-hmm. good employees from restaurants that closed. Or I can do this gracefully in my way,
right.
on my terms.
Right.
And that says, you know what? It's inevitable. It's going to happen. I can't make the numbers work and re-sign a lease for 5 more years or even 1 more year mm-hmm. and say this makes sense. Let's close on my terms.
All right. Were you guys busy with Badger football?
No,
that didn't affect you guys.
Well, in the past, yes.
In the past,
yeah. In the past.
So now that's weird, or no, I don't even know what's going
right.
on.
Right. So we would do as much money on a single Badger football game day as we would do in a week.
Wow.
During lockdown.
So
our weeks. So those Badger Saturdays.
Yeah.
Were the same as what we were doing. For an entire week in like June, July, August.
Wow, okay.
We do that in one day.
All right.
Sometimes more.
So them flip-flopping on the decision with the football thing?
Doesn't help. I mean, I can't put 108 people in there right now anyways.
No, right.
So what's the point?
Oh, fair, okay.
So what's the point? Unless we go to full capacity, and my staff would leave.
Right.
If we went to full capacity. They're not interested in full capacity.
Oh.
And I get that. We all want to stay safe.
Sure.
They want to stay safe, and they don't want that. So anyways.
All right.
So we're looking at all the factors. We don't have football. We don't have basketball coming up. We thrived on football, basketball, hockey, even some volleyball. We aren't a sports bar. We were the pre-game, post-game bar.
All right.
And we made a lot of money on football Saturdays, and that would carry us through the lean months of winter.
All right.
And it's just
and we're approaching winter.
Right. The profit numbers don't make sense because they don't exist. They're mm-hmm. 100% negative. I could buy a fine European sports car with how much money we lost this year.
All right.
So, you know, it's one of those things like, I'm not going to put any more of my own personal money into this
because
it really doesn't exist anymore.
It's a sinking ship, right?
It's a sinking ship. So sure. Can I steer it to the shore and hit the reef carefully as opposed to chipping the dang thing over on its
right
on its belly, or so to speak. So,
all right.
So let's close our way.
Mm-hmm.
Let's close gracefully. Let's do it the right way. And that's where we came up with the, you know, how to close our procedures. And we're closing a month. And after that, we'll sell as much beer. I came up with one last beer to sell, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. Mm-hmm. Those conversations started happening about 2 months ago. And then we came up with the plan last month.
Did you, what I want to ask. When you make your decisions, I'm like fumbling. Closing a business got to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
When you make your decisions pre-COVID,
mm-hmm.
did you have, like, it was you and your wife? Was it you, your managers? What did you have for your decision-making team?
It was me and my managers.
Okay.
Yeah, and then my wife, of course, was involved in that, too. me and my managers would make, the two managers I had, basically, and the three of us would make major operational decisions. And my wife and I would make kind of the long-term decisions. Like, if we were going to sign the lease again,
mm-hmm.
had COVID not happened, that would be between me and my wife for the most part, saying, do we want to do this for another 5 years? Or do we want to figure out a way to get rid of it, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But my managers and I would figure out all the operational decisions.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did the conversation go when you decided to close? Did one of your managers come to you and say, hey?
Well,
did you go to them and say,
hey? They asked very early on.
We're talking July?
July. Even like, are we closing? I said, not yet.
Okay. Not yet.
Not yet. So no.
We're delaying the inevitable.
Okay. That's when I would tell them. I said, here's how much money we got in the bank. It's fine.
Okay.
And I would tell them exactly how much money we had in the bank. It's fine. Mm-hmm. We're doing good. We're doing well. PPP money came through. I said, here's what we got for PPP. I was open book
mm-hmm.
with my managers. I'm like, this is my finances. And this is what I pay you. And this is what we need for operations. They knew that I knew my numbers. And I was very clear with them. I said, we're fine. Cash flow is good.
All right.
And then July, we looked at things and said,
meh.
Things are not going to be fine.
Oh, in July?
Because I was looking at the end of the CARES Act and the PPP. And
sure.
The rent and like some of this.
So you could see when more stuff is coming due and mm-hmm. less money was coming in as far as outside help.
Right. And I'm looking at it going, if the government doesn't change things, and I'm not looking for yet another handout, or if COVID doesn't change, or a vaccine doesn't miraculously appear,
right,
we're not going to be fine. So let's...
It doesn't say 70 degrees.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it doesn't say 70 degrees on winter. We need to be cognizant of that. And I want to make sure that they knew early on that I was going to keep them well informed.
All right.
And, you know, and then, you know, August, and then very much in September, we had the conversations of like, all right, are we or aren't we? And it finally came to a discussion where I sat them down and I said, we're going to have to close.
All right.
And I said, you got to keep this between the three of us
mm-hmm.
and my wife for now. And then at that point, we will figure out a plan. And then a few weeks later, we came up with a plan. And then that's what we're executing right now.
So what made you decide on the November 15th? Is November 14th?
14th,
okay.
It's a Saturday. It's right before the holiday season.
Okay.
And it basically allowed us 1 month from announcement to close, which is a perfect time for everybody to run ragged, because we're going to run ragged for the next month.
Just people excited to come one last time
thing? We did a lot of, this past weekend, we did quite a bit of business.
Okay.
More business than we've done in entire weeks.
Wow.
Actually, half a month.
Wow.
In the past,
okay.
During COVID, right? So I'm trying to put as much money in the bank as possible. I've got money set aside for salaries and taxes. You can't get away from those by law.
Mm-hmm.
So salaries and taxes have set aside. Get as much money in the bank as possible to pay off vendors and start paying off what I need to based on prioritization. And that's all internal discussion. But, I've got a lot of loans to pay off that I won't be able to.
Right.
So things are eventually going to default.
Right.
And at that point, we'll run down the scenario of what to do about that, and I'll work with an attorney, I suppose, on that scenario of what to pay. So they'll tell me what to do. But we came with that plan November 14th, because it was right before the holiday season. My chef is a deer hunter, and that is the week before deer hunting opens. So I said, let's...
You are welcome.
Yeah. No, he's got another job already, so he's good.
All right.
He works, third to halftime now for me.
All right.
He's already got another job. Don't worry about that. And that way allowed us time to do it on our own way and not try to fumble over Thanksgiving and fumble over Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And from my own personal perspective, just my own mental health perspective, I can be done, as much as it's going to hurt from a financial perspective, before the holidays. And I can be like, even if I can't go visit my family 100% during the holidays, I can not be open.
Sure.
And not have to deal with trying to staff a pub during the holidays.
Right.
And deal with the public during holidays and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, because they're going to want to do XYZ.
Add even more tension, right? The typical holiday tension.
and I think it's a good, clean break
from
that perspective to do it right before Thanksgiving and just be done and just try to decompress and enjoy my life.
All right. What was your landlord's reaction?
He is not real happy.
Okay.
He wants to sit down and figure out how we close things down.
Okay.
I told him I'd do everything I could to get everything out of there by March 31st.
Okay.
But there's agreements, you know, security agreements in the lease that says, you know, you've got to pay XYZ, blah, blah, blah. So we have to figure out what I can and can't pay, what is and isn't possible. And then, again, that's where lawyers come in, unfortunately, where you have to kind of figure out. So, yeah, I owe him back rent, and I recognize that. I'm not going to be able to pay it all. I recognize that, too.
All right.
So I don't have a lot of options to to go.
That's tough.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of roads to go down. So it's kind of a, can we come to an agreement on what I pay and be done? You know, wash my hands.
Right.
Or is there going to be a legal battle, which I really don't want?
Right, because that can get expensive. Nobody wins in court.
Correct. And you know, my lender, Summit Credit Union, has a lien on everything that's in there.
All right.
So they technically get first dibs at everything. So I don't want to create a fight between my lender and Summit.
Right.
Which he knows shouldn't happen because Summit gets first dibs and everything because they gave me the primary loan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd rather just say, what do you want me to do to the credit union? And everybody else, unfortunately, falls under that.
So I want to ask you something. I don't know if you have the answer to this, but what would you have liked to see so that businesses, restaurants, and stuff like that could stay open? Because restaurants are closing left and right.
Absolutely. And some are going to close just for winter, then figure out what the heck happens.
Yeah, like there's still, arguably, it's a restaurant closing pandemic, right?
It very much is, yeah.
So what would you have liked to see or see in the future to stop that or prevent that? Or is there something that exists? Or is this just the course of business that ebbs and flows? Some come, some go.
I think you get half and half. So the course of business,
mm-hmm.
some are going to fail. Some, it's going to come and go, right?
Right.
You know, McDonald's and Culver's are doing great.
Well, right. There's a McDonald's in Sun Prairie that just closed.
Sure.
I shouldn't say just, but okay. I mean by high school.
I know that Culver's is
just they're killing
it because it's the comfort food, easy to get,
yeah,
fresh. Because I love the product. I think Culver's is great. It's a great freaking business model.
It's got a reputation. Yeah.
I think Craig Culver was a genius in that whole franchise model. So he's going to do great.
Mm-hmm.
McDonald's corporately overall is doing very well. Just look at their stock, right?
Yeah.
Anytime a pandemic happens or an economic downturn happens, stuff like Culver's and McDonald's go up, and then the chains somewhat survive. Applebee's, mm-hmm. Chili's, mm-hmm. they'll survive because they've got corporate money that they can put back into them.
Applebee's surviving?
Not all of them, but you can look at this pandemic as kind of just an economic downturn from that perspective, and that economic downturn is going to kill a lot of local restaurants. It happens every time. I'm sure it happened back in 2008, and then before that, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Restaurants go out of business.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side of that, there's like, wow, this is a little bit extreme.
Extremely extreme.
Yeah.
You're talking like a year.
It's
plus.
A little bit extreme. It's more like a Great Depression from a restaurant perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And what could we have done differently? You know, do you do a restaurant specific bailout? The Wisconsin Restaurant Association's pushing for that. So all of its members.
I bet they are.
Yeah, very much because they're losing all their members. Do you do a restaurant specific bailout, like to do an airline specific bailout, or remember the old days of the auto bailouts, or those kind of things, those big companies? Well, the government doesn't like to bail out little companies. They like to bail out
the big
Wall
ones.
Street and airlines and
car companies. Airlines are bailed out every decade. So.
Yeah, right. So the car companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
They don't like to bail out the little guy because it's harder to regulate that money.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we don't have the CEO power that the airlines and the restaurant and then the Wall Street people do. So
yeah, I was going to think.
So what do? Do you do a restaurant bailout? You could look into something like that, but is it worth it? Only to some extent. If I put like a analyst government hat on, it's not worth it to a larger extent. But I also don't think the airline bailout is either.
Right.
So it's like.
So I looked at the PPP loan, and I considered that to be the government saying, look, we have two options.
Yeah.
A bunch of people can get laid off, and we can end up having to pay them with unemployment. Or we can throw PPP money at a bunch of business owners, and they can pay unemployment.
Sort of, yeah.
Whether they're employed or not.
Which I did. I gave furlough pay.
Yeah. So, I mean, people can essentially eat. They can pay the rent and all that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's however that money gets to them, the government used a lot of business owners essentially as a filter
mm-hmm.
for that. So, but to that point, I get it. When you're laying off 21 people, that sucks.
It does.
That's 21 people that are going to have to find a way to pay for rent and all that kind of stuff. And maybe some of those people were part-time, so it's not an issue. They weren't exactly living off that money. There had to be a fair amount that were full-time.
There's a few that are full-time, and that was what they were living on for the most part.
So now they got to go chase down a government nut for a little bit until they find something else?
Well, the unemployment, they get the extra $600 a week through unemployment. That helped quite a bit. That was for a while.
Oh, my gosh. It was tough to find an employee then.
Yeah, yeah.
Because when you're supposed to hire them back,
they want
now
more,
they're making an extra $2,400 a month on top of what they were making before. Yeah.
Plus, you know, I did a couple things. I gave furlough pay to all my staff that was on staff.
All right.
It wasn't a lot. It was a little bit. And I gave everybody a raise.
All right.
When the pandemic hit.
Sure.
Who was still working for me. Then we reopened. I made sure there was... And now, when I announced I was closing, I actually announced I was closing and told everybody they were getting a raise then, too.
All right.
So I gave everybody a
so
raise.
So they stick with you to the end?
And there's a bonus program at the end, too. So you work out all your shifts, and I've got a little bonus for you at the end.
All right.
So I wanted my people with me until mm-hmm. the end. So it's like, I want to take care of my employees. The government right. sort of took care of the employees, but I want to take care of my employees
for,
at the end.
For a couple months.
Right? As much as I can. Like... You know, at the end of the day, I can't take care of myself anymore from
right.
a financial perspective, so I might mm-hmm. as well try to take care of the employees mm-hmm. as best I can.
Mm-hmm.
So they're making buco bucks and tips, and, you know, kitchen staff got raises, and, you know, wait staff got raises. So everybody got a raise as soon as I announced I was closing. And I said, if you do XYZ, there's a bonus at the end for you. You just got to be loyal and stick it out.
Sure. So. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So what's next for you? Maybe not the next few months, but let's say over the course of the year.
Yeah. Well, other than closing down operations and figuring out where, you know, where that affects me personally, financially, and
yeah.
where it doesn't.
I mean, is it a plan to get a day job, or is it a plan
I'll get a job. You know, I can go back to the corporate world or government or teaching or something to
sure.
that effect. You know,
okay.
Consulting, I don't know.
here's what not to do.
You know, yeah. It's like
don't open during a pandemic.
If you can't teach, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, other than that, I don't have a long-term plan for the first time in like 20 years.
Okay.
And I'm kind of loving that.
All right.
It's like I am actually really happy to have what looks like a pretty darn blank slate.
Mm.
And maybe we'll move out of town.
All right.
Maybe we'll move out of the country. I don't know.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of like we'll figure that out. And I'm not going to worry about that right now.
I forgot to ask you this, right? How did your wife react when you told her we're closing up shop?
Well, I mean, she knew before everybody else, right? So
okay.
she and I have been talking about it for, you know.
Did she get that feeling before you pulled the trigger on it?
Yeah. I mean, she and I were very honest with each other. We always are.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like, this might not... March 16th, I said to her, we might not survive this.
Right.
I'll do everything I can, but we might not survive this.
All right.
You know, so that was on the table. And by the time it came to saying we're going to close, you know, she knew that the stress level on me was just...
Right.
It was ridiculous. I couldn't sleep at night. I'm tossing and turning, grinding my teeth. My shoulders are tense, the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't working well for me.
Yeah.
And it's kind of those things like, from my perspective, it's going to hurt financially, but it might be just better in the end. So, yeah, she knew. She and I are very open with each other, and it might just be better in the end as much as it will shed a lot of tears over it, too.
All right.
We already have.
So, I sold a business 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when I drive past... the old shop that I used to have,
mm-hmm.
There's still interesting memories that go by. So when you drive past Rockhound in 3 years, what do you think you'll feel?
Depends
regardless of what it is,
depends
right?
on what's there.
Well, let's just say, for example, it's a brew pub,
yeah.
right?
I'll stop in and see who the owners are.
Okay.
You know, and you wish them well, you know?
All right.
If it's still empty, I'll be like, well...
Let's hope not.
Yeah. So, well, that means the landlord should have made a better deal for me.
Right.
Not to be a jerk, but...
Right,
he should have put more on the table for me
yeah.
to try to keep me open.
Right,
you know, again, he's been a business partner. He's made his own business decisions. I'm not saying he's at fault,
because mm-hmm.
He certainly isn't.
In the end, it's a game.
You know, one of my staff joked the other day. He said, if this turns into a Starbucks, I'm gonna be so mad. And I cracked up. I was sitting at the bar, and he was my bartender. So I just cracked up. You know, maybe it'll be a Starbucks. Maybe it'll be a coffee shop.
Sure.
You know,
a daycare.
Maybe it'll be
a
Walgreens.
Know.
Maybe it'll be a daycare. I don't know.
Right.
Daycare would fit in there perfectly once you get rid of the brewing equipment in the kitchen.
Right.
So make some softer floors. But,
depending upon the staff, right? Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like 3 years from now, I don't know. I don't know what'll happen. You know, maybe I won't be in the city in 3 years.
All right.
And one of my friends will probably send me a picture or something like that of
yeah.
What it is.
So what have you learned from all this so far?
Don't start a restaurant.
Brutal honesty right there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
No, it's, I've learned a lot of what to do, what not to do. I've learned that I've done a lot of things right. I've done some things wrong.
All right.
And I've learned that you can do things as up and up and ethically and positively as possible and still fail. And
true.
I also need to be comfortable with that.
Mm-hmm. So. That's interesting. That's a great, great point.
Yeah.
I was talking with a friend of mine that's got a retail store on State Street.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been dealt a bad hand.
Of course. State Street's in a mess right now.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, on top, we got pandemic, you got protests, you got homeless, you got just people just don't want to go downtown.
Bad rents there, yeah. Very bad.
Oh, insane.
Insane rents.
Yeah, she's just dealt a bad hand. Mm-hmm. And she's been doing that for a decade plus. And I'm like, there's no shame in walking away.
No, there isn't. And that's what I've kind of come to terms with over the past three or four months.
Yeah, it's
just like, it's you know what? If I have to walk away, there's no shame in that. I'm 43.
Sure.
Life isn't over for me yet. Mm-hmm. I can pick up the pieces and figure out what to do next and use this as a great learning experience. Maybe I'll write a book someday. Who knows?
Yeah, chalk it up to experience and move on, I guess, is what I would say.
I'm looking forward to the next chapter. I'll say that much. I'm absolutely looking forward to what's next and getting the mental weight of this off of my shoulders.
Yeah.
And looking forward to that next chapter of life and seeing where it takes me and having that blank slate again. It'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that midnight or 2 a.m. on November 14th will be an interesting time.
Yeah.
I don't know when closing time is in pandemic.
Well, yeah, whenever people leave, I suppose.
Okay. So. Get out, we're done!
Get out, we're done. By 2 a.m., so that's...
Interesting. So, Nate, I want to thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, absolutely.
How can people order from you online for the next month-ish, few weeks, whatever?
Yeah, rockhoundbrewing.com.
All right.
It's real simple, Rockhound Brewing, not brewery, brewing.com. Mm-hmm. And there's a link on there for our online ordering system. And if for some reason they can't get that to work, give us a call. But it should work pretty well for almost everything, including beer vouchers.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So you can just come in and claim their beer with a voucher and an ID.
Okay. What's a beer voucher?
Well, you can't legally sell beer online, but you can sell pieces of paper online. So you get a voucher
game.
For beer.
Yeah. The game. Yeah. That's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you so much for being on the show. This is cool. Is there anything else you want to share with your people as a closing?
No, I mean, obviously, you know, thanks to all of my staff and my wife and of course, all of our patrons during the whole thing. It's been a lot of fun, and it sucks, but, you know, I really appreciate what everybody did for us.
Sure. Chalk it up to experience and move on, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes or closures, whatever.
Yeah.
Coming to you from our makeshift studio here during this COVID time. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering services and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com. As well as Draw In Customers Business Coaching, offering coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business. Maybe not right at the end, but what are you going to do, right?
It could be real.
It could be, you know, it's probably something we can tell you. Yeah. On the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, The Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur in all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Nate Warnke, owner of Rockhound Brewing Company. Nate, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks, James.
I'm going to include a link to the original interview that we had, I don't know, was that a couple of years ago?
It was a couple Something years like ago,
that?
Yeah.
Yep. Man, time flies.
Yeah.
This would be interesting to just see, man. So much has happened.
Yep.
So much has happened. But at any rate, whatever you do, you should go check out Nate's Rockhound Brewing while you still can. Mm-hmm. November 14th is the last day.
November 14th, last day to the public. Other than beer sales, we'll still have beer after that.
You will?
We'll still have, we think. So we'll do beer sales a couple days a week. But November 14th is the last full service day for
food. All right, we'll get the beer. It's good stuff. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunpraymediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, this is probably terrible advice for Nate. Enjoy your business. Thanks, man.
Thank you.